Okay, so today's deep dive is going to be a real head scratcher. Even for, lawyers who've seen it all,
Oh.
we're talking about the Unabomber, Theodore Kaczynski.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure most people remember the bombings themselves, 17 years of terror. I mean, everyone was on edge. But what's really interesting is the legal battle that happened after Kaczynski was arrested.
It's a wild story. What makes this case so fascinating, I think, is that Kaczynski wasn't just fighting the charges against him. He was also fighting with his own defense team. Like, imagine that, battling your own lawyers when you're facing the death penalty.
It's crazy. So, okay, to set the stage a little, his lawyers wanted to use a mental impairment defense, which, is a pretty standard strategy in death penalty cases. But Kaczynski, he was totally against it. He saw his actions as like a calculated response to the dangers of technology. Like he was defending himself against a society he thought was, going off the rails.
And that's where we hit the first legal and ethical snag. Who gets to decide the defense strategy, the lawyer or the client? Especially when the stakes are so high.
That's a really tough question. I mean, lawyers are supposed to act in their client's best interest, but what if the client's idea of best interest clashes with what the lawyer thinks? And, in a death penalty case, it's life or death.
Absolutely. And to make things even more complicated, Kaczynski eventually agreed to a plea bargain to avoid execution. But later, he claimed he was pressured into it. He said he only took the deal because the court wouldn't let him represent himself. So he felt like he was stuck between an offense he hated and giving up his right to, present his own case.
So was his plea actually voluntary? Or was it because of his lawyer's strategy and the court not letting him represent himself?
That's the big question. And it touches on some really important legal ideas. The right to self-representation, can someone plead guilty if they feel forced into it? And what about the ethics of defending a client whose ideas are, well, so different from your own?
Let's back up a second and talk about Kaczynski's request to be his own lawyer. He formally asked the court, after jury selection had already started, he wanted to present his own defense, his whole ideology about technology being the problem.
Right, and the timing here is interesting. Remember, he'd initially said okay to some mental health evidence, then all of a sudden he wanted to completely change course. The court said no to his request. They said it would cause delays and that the case was too complex. I mean, there were thousands of pieces of evidence, technical stuff about the bombs. It was a lot.
So basically, the court was like, too late, you can't switch things up now. But does the court have the right to deny someone the right to represent themselves, especially in a case where someone could be put to death?
That's where the Ferretta test comes in. It's based on a Supreme Court case. The test looks at whether the defendant's request is timely, if they really mean it, and if it's just a way to delay the trial. And with Kaczynski, the timing of his request did seem suspicious. The court saw it as him trying to disrupt things.
So they basically said, nice try, but we're sticking to the plan. But Kaczynski's reasons for wanting to represent himself were deeper than that. He really believed that any mental health defense would go against his entire worldview. Like it was dehumanizing him.
Yeah, it wasn't about playing legal games. This was about his core beliefs. And it raises a tough question. How much do we respect a defendant's right to make their own choices, even when those choices seem irrational or even harmful to their own case?
And on the other side, how do lawyers handle representing someone like Kaczynski? Can they ethically use a mental health defense if their client doesn't want it? Where's the line between doing what you think is best and respecting what your client wants, even when you don't agree?
These are really difficult questions. And actually, the courts weighed in on this with Kaczynski. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ended up siding with his defense team. They said it was okay for them to present evidence about his mental state.
So they were saying it was fine for the lawyers to go against their client's wishes in this case. Did everyone agree with that decision?
Well, not quite. There was a strong dissenting opinion from Judge Reinhardt. He argued that Kaczynski's Sixth Amendment rights were violated and that his guilty plea wasn't really voluntary because of the court's decision.
Okay, so we've got a real disagreement here between legal experts. I think we need to unpack the majority and dissenting opinions because that's where this whole legal dilemma really comes to a head.
Let's start by looking at the majority opinion. They really focused on when Kaczynski made his request and what they saw as him trying to manipulate the legal process. So Judge Reimer, he wrote the majority opinion. And his argument basically boiled down to this: Kaczynski's request to represent himself, it just came way too late. They saw it as him, purposely trying to drag out the trial, especially since they'd already picked the jury and he had even said okay to some mental health evidence at first.
So, like, he missed his chance.
Pretty much, yeah. The court was really focused on keeping the trial running smoothly and efficiently. They said if they let defendants go back and forth between having a lawyer and representing themselves, especially this late in the game, it would just create chaos in the courts.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, this wasn't just any case. It was huge. Everyone was watching. Any delays would have just made things even more intense.
Exactly. And the court, they also pointed to the official record from the plea hearing. Kaczynski had said under oath that he was pleading guilty voluntarily and that he was happy with his lawyers, except for that whole mental health defense thing.
So the majority was saying, look, he said it himself, he chose this. End of story.
Well, not exactly. That's where Judge Reinhardt's dissent comes in. He argued that the majority, they totally missed the point of Kaczynski's objections. Like, they downplayed how important it was for him to have control over his own defense. Remember, Kaczynski saw that mental health defense as a direct attack on his beliefs. You know, it went against everything he stood for.
Right, he wasn't just being difficult.
Yeah.
His opposition to the mental health thing, it came from his deep anti-psychiatry views. That was a core part of who he was, his whole worldview.
Exactly. Reinhardt argued that by not letting Kaczynski represent himself and present his own defense, the court was basically silencing him. They took away his chance to explain his actions in his own words, no matter how controversial those actions or explanations might be.
That's a pretty serious accusation, saying that Kaczynski's rights were violated, even though he did plead guilty in the end.
It is, and Reinhardt didn't stop there. He also went after how the majority interpreted the plea bargain. He said because Kaczynski wasn't allowed to represent himself, the plea deal couldn't really be seen as voluntary. It was like he was forced into a corner. Choose a defense he hated or give up his right to present his own case.
So a no-win situation.
Exactly. Reinhardt argued that kind of pressure just goes against the whole idea of a voluntary plea, which is, you know, a fundamental part of our legal system. He thought the court cared more about having a smooth trial than making sure Kaczynski's rights were fully protected.
That sounds like he was pretty critical of the majority's decision.
He was. Reinhardt said the majority cared more about the court system running smoothly than about protecting Kaczynski's individual rights. He felt like the court's desire for efficiency should never come before a defendant's right to a fair trial, especially in a capital case where someone's life is literally on the line.
Reinhardt makes a really compelling argument. Even though he didn't change what happened in the case, his dissenting opinion is still studied a lot by lawyers and law students.
It is, and for good reason. It reminds us that legal cases, they're not just about procedures and rules. They're about real people with real lives. And those people's rights need to be protected, even when they're accused of doing terrible things.
His dissent also makes you think about the ethical problems lawyers face in these high-stakes cases, right? Especially when their clients' beliefs are so different from their own.
Absolutely. It makes us ask, should a lawyer be able to go against their client's wishes if they think it's in the client's best interest? And what happens when a client's right to make their own choices clashes with the lawyer's judgment and their ethical duties?
Are there any easy answers?
Not really. The Unabomber case shows us that these ethical dilemmas are always there, lurking in our legal system. They pop up in complex and challenging ways.
So what are the big takeaways from this case? What can lawyers and law students learn from all of this back and forth?
Well, I think the Unabomber case shows us a few really important things. First off, clear communication between a lawyer and their client is absolutely essential. Lawyers need to make sure their clients understand what could happen with different legal strategies, and they need to be sensitive to their clients' beliefs and values, even when those beliefs are difficult to deal with.
So it's not just about winning. It's about respecting the client as a person, even when you disagree with their worldview.
Exactly. And second, documentation is so important. Lawyers need to keep good records of any disagreements they have with their clients about legal strategy, especially when mental health is involved. These records can be super important if the case gets appealed or if the client later says they were forced into something.
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. Having a clear record protects both the lawyer and the client. Anything else?
Yeah, the Unabomber case also shows how important timing is when someone wants to represent themselves. Waiting till the last minute, it can look like you're just trying to delay things, and the court's less likely to say yes.
So Kaczynski's case, it might seem like an unusual example because of his beliefs and what he did, but the legal and ethical questions it raises, those are relevant to any lawyer who works with criminal defendants.
Definitely. It's a case every lawyer should study and think about. It makes us face some of the biggest tensions in our legal system. The right to make your own choices versus the need for order, the role of mental health in criminal defense, and that tricky balance between fighting for your client and keeping the legal profession ethical.
It makes you wonder what would have happened if the court had let Kaczynski represent himself. Could he have explained his whole anti-technology thing in a way that the jury would actually get? Or would it have totally blown up in his face?
Well, it's tough to say for sure. I mean, he was a smart guy, no doubt. But he was also, you know, pretty troubled. He might have been able to make a good argument against technology, at least intellectually, but he also tended to ramble and go off on tangents.
Yeah, and his ideology, it was pretty extreme, even for people who agreed with some of his points. He wasn't just saying we need to limit technology. He wanted to get rid of industrial society altogether. That's a pretty radical idea, especially when you're on trial for terrorism.
Right, and that kind of message, coming from someone who'd done such awful things, it might have just made the jury dislike him even more. Plus, think about the practical stuff. This was a complicated case, tons of evidence. Even experienced lawyers would have a hard time handling it all.
And Kaczynski had zero legal training. He'd be going up against a whole team of prosecutors who knew the law backwards and forwards. Seems like a losing battle from the start.
It would have been tough, that's for sure. And even if he somehow dodged the death penalty, he was almost definitely getting a life sentence anyway. The evidence was just too strong.
So even though the court denying him the right to represent himself raises all these legal questions, it probably wouldn't have changed how the case ended.
Yeah, most likely. But it does make you think about individual freedom versus the role of the legal system. Like, should the system protect people's beliefs, even when those beliefs are unpopular or dangerous?
Because as much as we might disagree with Kaczynski's ideas and, you know, condemn his actions, he still deserved a fair trial, and part of that is having a say in how you defend yourself.
I totally agree. That's what makes Judge Reinhardt's dissent so important. It reminds us that the rights of the accused, they're not just some abstract idea. They're the basis of a fair and just society.
Even when the accused is someone like the Unabomber.
Especially when it's someone like the Unabomber. Because it's in those cases, when we might want to deny someone their rights, that it's most important to uphold the idea of due process and a fair trial.
So this deep dive into the Unabomber case, it hasn't just been about legal stuff and courtroom drama. It's been about some of the most basic questions we have about justice, freedom, and the limits of individual rights in a society where we have laws.
And it's a conversation that's still going on today.
Absolutely. The Unabomber case is over, but the legal and ethical issues it brings up, those are timeless. This case reminds us that the law isn't just about rules and regulations. It's about people and the choices they make, even when those choices are tough or controversial or even really bad.
And it's about finding that balance between individual rights and the need for order and justice in society, a balance that's always being challenged and redefined.
Well said. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive. It's been a really interesting and thought-provoking look at a truly one-of-a-kind case.
Happy to be here.
And to all of you listening, keep those legal minds sharp. And remember, sometimes the most important legal battles happen outside the courtroom. They happen when ideas clash and people fight for their individual rights in a complicated world. Until next time, stay curious.